and the complex emotional landscape that followed the war's end. Front Row is at 7:15 here on Radio 4.
BBC Radio 4 Extra's Comedy Club heads to the Machynlleth Comedy Festival.
It's great. I'm soaking it up, metaphorically and physically, because it's already chugging it down.
As the comedy world descends on this enchanting town...
It's a really good place.
Oh, this is my life now.
It's amazing.
This show is chaos.
We will bring you highlights and behind-the-scenes conversations from a jam-packed weekend in Wales.
I've never heard a single comedian have a bad thing to say about it.
I've always wanted to do this festival when I started doing comedy, so like it feels like a big deal.
The Comedy Club at Machynlleth, with me, Esil Sears. Continues every night this week from 11 on Radio 4 Extra and BBC Sounds.
And here on Radio 4, our 6:30 comedy continues now as we join David Mitchell and the panel.
We present The Unbelievable Truth, the panel game built on truth and lies. In the chair, please welcome David Mitchell.
Hello and welcome to The Unbelievable Truth, the panel show about incredible truths and barely credible lies. I'm David Mitchell. I'm joined by a group of comedians who are so brilliant that I'd happily dub them the Fab Four if it wasn't for the Beatles getting there first and being quite a lot better. Please welcome Holly Walsh, Tony Hawks, Marcus Brigstocke and Lou Sanders. The rules are as follows. Each panellist will present a short lecture that should be entirely false, save for five hidden truths which their opponent should try to identify. Points are scored by truths that go unnoticed, while other panellists can win points if they spot a truth or lose points if they mistake a lie for a truth. First up is Marcus Brigstocke. A cheese expert, Marcus served as a judge at the 2019 World Cheese Awards, which was ultimately won by Rogue River Blue. Aged with alcohol, highly pungent and riddled with blue veins, Marcus said he enjoyed the experience very much. Marcus, your subject is legs, the parts of the body of a human or animal that are used for standing or walking. Off you go, Marcus. Fingers on buzzers, the rest of you.
The Chinese term for a hairy-legged woman translates into English as furry-legged pig beast. And the leg hair on a lady is deemed so unattractive in modern Shanghai, you can buy hairy tights to help ward off unwanted male attention.
Holly.
I bet there is something in that.
Buying the hairy tights?
Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, in 2013, China introduced what was described as a summertime anti-pervert device. hairy leg stockings to protect girls from unwanted male attention. The tights are covered in thick black hair that runs all the way down to the ankle.
That stops at the ankle?
Yes, stops at the ankle.
So really smooth feet with a line of hair that goes all the way up.
Trust me, it's not as sexy as it sounds. If you want hairy tights in the UK, simply own a cat. The only person to have three fully grown working legs was Jacob Dorpeg from the Netherlands. He lived in a small town outside Utrecht called Didelum. Most snakes have legs, but being snakes, they're really sneaky about them and hide them under special flaps. Lizards...
Tony.
I think, in a way, they do have legs, snakes.
In what way?
I don't like the way this is going. In the way they conceal them under little flaps. So they would have had legs, and then they realised they didn't need them anymore, so they're not functional. They're like, what an appendix is.
The situation is that snakes don't have legs.
Right.
Tony.
Yeah. I don't think that's a big news to anyone.
No. It is true that pythons and boa constrictors have tiny vestigial hind leg bones buried in muscles towards their tail ends.
Which makes my buzz less ridiculous.
It does make it less ridiculous.
Thank
they don't count as legs, unfortunately.
Okay.
Marcus.
Lizards, which I think Tony was thinking of, are just snakes who've been caught. Whales do have legs, which they only ever put to use when they're doing their Duke of Edinburgh Award.
Holly.
Well, something's got to have a leg that you didn't think had a leg.
Yeah. And
The snake didn't have a leg. The pattern suggests that a whale does have a leg.
Leg, no leg, leg, no leg.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're saying that whales have legs?
Yeah.
They do.
Yes!
Yeah. Yes. Whales retain tiny hind legs, though they serve no purpose and are contained completely within the body. The forelimbs of modern whales have evolved into flippers. In 1990, scientists found fossil evidence in Egypt suggesting that whales had functioning hind legs and feet for more than 10 million years after they left the land for the sea. That's good to know if you're planning on going aquatic. It'll be 10 million years before you lose functioning legs, so you can always back out of it. it's like a cooling off period. Marcus.
Technically, centipedes and millipedes don't have legs. What entomologists thought were legs are actually just fancy little arms.
Ooh!
Lou.
Could that be true?
No, could legs be true. Just fancy little arms. We'll go with Holly's system of legs, shit. no legs. Because the whale had legs, so you'd think then the centipedes and millipedes don't have legs.
Yeah. No, I don't.
Except that centipedes and millipedes are clearly covered in legs. You just look at them and what the word that comes to mind is just legs. Marcus.
In a pinch, a male elephant can use his penis as a fifth leg capable of supporting his body weight.
Holly. I'm going legs, no legs, legs, no legs. Pattern, legs. Yeah. True.
Well, except no, because the previous one was legs again, because you had legs for whales, so now we'd be on a leg, 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 leg.
No, but she was wrong.
Yeah, but that's a different system. Right, wrong, right, wrong. So legs, no legs, legs, no legs. But... the whole leg, no leg, leg, no leg might be a bit of a red herring.
Oh, okay.
Because a male elephant can use his penis.
Yes, thank you.
Yes. Elephant penises are not only massive, they can reach up to a metre long, and they're also prehensile and capable of supporting the elephant's body weight. National Geographic writer Ed Young recounts seeing a bull elephant use his penis to prop himself up, swat flies from his side, and scratch himself on his stomach.
Wow. Do you think he might have just mistaken the penis for a trunk?
Well, he might have done, but he was a National Geographic writer. There's some fact-checking. He's sort of going, someone will have gone, Ed, you know they've got long noses, right? Oh, it's its nose! Oh, I thought it was odd it was eating with its ass.
The term buckle at the knee originally came from the days when handbags were mostly made from the skin from amputated human legs. A woman from Manchester has been trying to find anyone who will turn her leg into a bag. When asked what thighs she wanted, she said, just over a foot and a calf, please. Car makers Rolls-Royce and Hyundai are in a race trying to build the first walking car. The Strolls-Royce is still at the testing stage, but the Hyundai Mince has four substantial legs and can sashay about like a camp Japanese transformer.
Thank you, Marcus. And at the end of that round, Marcus, you've managed to smuggle two truths past the rest of the panel, which are that a woman from Manchester has been trying to find anyone who will turn her leg into a bag. A 55-year-old woman from Manchester has been trying to find a designer who will make her a handbag from the skin from her amputated leg. And the second truth is that Hyundai are trying to build the first walking car. The car operates like a normal automobile, but has the ability to deploy four mechanical multi-joint legs and step over obstacles up to 5 foot in height or length.
If Rolls-Royce don't make a Strolls-Royce, they're fools to themselves. Yeah.
And that means, Marcus, you've scored 2 points. OK, we turn now to Holly Walsh. Holly, your subject is cheese, a solid food made from the pressed curds of milk. Fingers on buzzers, everyone else. Off you go, Holly.
Can I just say this is already the best night of my life? I mean, I might know it, but if I don't, I'm going to learn things. This is amazing.
What's the best cheese you ever ate?
Oh, it depends so much on the day, but it might be...
Wednesday. Let's say it's a Wednesday.
Wensleydale, obviously.
I'll tell you, Jamie Montgomery, who makes Montgomery's Cheddar, uses 6 different starter cultures, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And when he eats his cheddar, he can tell you what day the starter culture is from. That is how refined Jamie Montgomery's cheddar palate is.
Absolutely amazing. So what you're saying is he has a slice of cheese and then he will name a day.
Yeah.
And people will believe that's the day.
Yeah. Yeah, now you put it like that.
Amazing.
I feel like a fool.
I'm going to be very careful in this lecture. Firstly, because it's almost impossible to lie about cheese. In fact, eating bread and cheese was used as a lie detector in ancient Britain on the assumption that if you were eating cheese, you were probably French and therefore a liar. But also because the cheese industry is one of the most powerful organisations in the world. The Mafia was originally a collective of dairy farmers who were so paranoid about being spied on, they would even blindfold their own horses, giving us mascarpone. And most people have associated cheese with crime ever since. An amazing 4% of all cheese produced in the world is stolen in what's known in Hollywood as Brie larceny. Here in Britain, the cheese industry was behind one of the first instances of a film being banned. The film involved a close-up of a piece of Stilton, making it the first ever blue movie. They're also very cunning. The Ploughman's Lunch is actually a massive lie and was invented by the Cheese Board in the 60s as a way of boosting sales.
Tony.
Ploughman never had anything to do with the Ploughman's Lunch, so I think it was the Cheese Marketing Board that got behind it.
You're absolutely right. Yes. Though the meal Ploughman's Lunch sounds old, it in fact came into being in the 1960s for the promotion of the UK cheese industry.
The stuff used in cheeseburgers actually contains no cheese at all, so it's technically a seasoning.
Tony.
I think I'll go for that. I don't think they put any cheese in it.
They do put cheese in
it. Do they? Oh.
It's not a seasoning, it's cheese. Though, yeah. You don't get a point, because this is not marked as true.
Oh.
But according to the US Food and Drug Administration, American cheese cannot be classed as a true cheese as more than 50% of it is made up of other ingredients such as whey, milk proteins, emulsifiers and salts.
So it wasn't utterly ridiculous, my challenge.
No, it wasn't. No, not utterly ridiculous.
That's the main thing. That's why I come on here.
You've retained a sliver of respectability.
Yeah. Well, you lose in points, you gain in dignity.
I wouldn't say gain. I'd say, you know,
you
retain some dignity.
I can still go out in public after the broadcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas Lou,
no.
Flor de Guia cheese from the Canary Islands can only be made by women because it would cost too much to pay men to do it. And Philip Pyle, a Canadian cheesemaker, once made cheese from milking a grizzly bear. He said it tasted surprisingly delicious. At least they think that's what he said. It was hard to hear him through the full body cast and iron lung. And that is everything I know about cheese, or as the Norwegians call it, roughly translated, chunky stink cream.
Thank you, Holly. That's it. So, Holly, at the end of that round, you've managed to smuggle 4 truths past the rest. Yeah. Despite having a cheese expert next to you.
If I lose my badge because of this, I'll be very upset.
The first truth is that eating bread and cheese was used as a lie detector in ancient Britain. In ancient Britain, a common method of lie detection was to feed suspected criminals a large slice of bread and cheese blessed by a priest. If the person choked or couldn't swallow, they were considered guilty. For centuries in Europe, having a dry mouth was thought to be a sign of guilt. The second truth is that 4% of all cheese produced in the world is stolen. According to Interpol, cheese is the most stolen foodstuff in the world. And the third truth is that the cheese industry was behind one of the first instances of a film being banned. From 1903, a silent film entitled Cheese Mites, featuring close-up footage of cheese mites on Stilton shot through a microscope. It inspired the wrath of British cheesemakers concerned it would cause a collapse in cheese sales. And the fourth truth is that Flor de Guia cheese from the Canary Islands, in order to be considered a genuine article, can only be made by women. But that's not because it's too expensive to pay men to make it. And that means, Holly, you've scored 4 points. In Philadelphia, the so-called Swiss cheese pervert was a flasher who wrapped his genitals in cheese.
Fortunately, he never encased them in biscuits, as that would be crackers.
Also, that was in Philadelphia, which is in itself a cheese.
Yes.
But very hard to get that to adhere to your penis. It's too, in my experience, far too loose.
I would have thought that Philadelphia was one of the easier cheeses to stick
yeah,
on your
when
pizza.
You
I'm not saying it's child's play, but compared to try and balance a bit of Cheshire...
Yeah, no, Cheshire's a fool's errand, far too crumbly. Your best approach, David, is to go with a Swiss cheese. They've very thoughtfully already put holes in them.
Next up is Lou Sanders. Lou, your subject is New York, a city and port located at the mouth of the Hudson River in the northeastern USA. Off you go, Lou.
The first immigrants to arrive in New York were in fact Jewish and Scottish, and the first synagogue in New York was founded in 1789 by Rabbi Burns. 10% of the water in New York's main supply contains sugar, and 4% contains fecal matter. You want fecal or you want treacle?
Marcus.
I think 10% of it contains sugar.
No.
Oh.
Tony.
4% of it contains fetal matter.
Fecal. You said fetal. That's different and worse.
Yeah, yeah.
Neither, I'm happy to say.
Yeah. All right, yeah. OK.
Oh, I'm tricking you left, right and centre over here.
Well. Absolutely. You're getting loads of points for everyone.
15% of the air in the New York subway contains human skin. You've got to be skin it to win it.
Holly.
I think that might be true, because, like, in the tube, there's the huge fans at the end of all of the platforms have, like, tons of human, like, hair and pubes and bogies and stuff like that
yes.
in it. So I reckon there probably is a horrible amount of skin knocking about.
You're absolutely right. Yeah.
The original inhabitants of New York were a tribe of cannibals, and that habit dies hard. Every year, 1,500 New Yorkers are bitten by other New Yorkers.
Marcus.
Oh, yep.
Off.
Yes, as you may have inferred from Lou's response. You're absolutely right there, Marcus.
Oh.
According to figures issued by the New York Health Department, on average, 1,500 New Yorkers are bitten by other humans each year, coming second only to dogs, who bite around 9,000 New Yorkers each year, and ahead of cats, who bite just over 800 a year.
In 2012, a New Yorker called Deborah Stevens agreed to donate a kidney to her boss, only to be fired immediately after doing so. When it happened, Deborah said, "Are you kidneying me?" And the joke was so appreciated, she got rehired.
Holly.
I mean, why would you tell that fact if there wasn't some truth in it?
Because I wanted to say, "Are you kidneying me?"
That was all a setup for that punchline.
Yeah. Say it yourself. It's quite nice to say.
No, it is nice, but really, is that all that was?
No, it's true.
Hey!
Debbie Stevens, a 47-year-old from Long Island, New York, was fired within a week of donating her kidney following a request to do so by her boss, Jackie Brucier. Stevens told ABC News, "It was almost like she hired me just to get my kidney." That is, it's possible, isn't it?
Do you think it's because she took sick leave and they were, like, annoyed about it?
It's the cruelest thing I've ever heard. And I like it. Lou.
In Brooklyn, it's against the law to book a hotel room with a double bed if you're not a married couple. On the other hand, New York City residents can get free condoms and lube by calling 311.
Tony.
They could, for 311 in an emergency, they can phone up and get those.
I'm having a nightmare here. No,
you're absolutely right, Tony. Oh. Well, they can get New York City residents can get free condoms and lube by calling 311. It has become the largest condom distribution platform in the United States and has handed out over 148,000 safe sex kits to New Yorkers since World AIDS Day in 2015.
Oh, good on them.
That's actually not that much.
All right. Married life going well. New York State have introduced a bill to outlaw flirting in public. One guy, Mickey Jones, got arrested 16 times because he loved to flirt, and he also shot 15 people. Something that you might not know is that the city that never sleeps is actually twinned with Ipswich, a city that never wakes up.
Thank you, Lou.
So, the end of that round, Lou, you've managed to smuggle one truth past the rest of the panel, which is that New York State have introduced a bill to outlaw flirting in public.
I didn't know that was true.
This is in January 1902. The state of New York introduced a bill outlawing flirting. There was a strong anti-flirting movement across the US with anti-flirt clubs set up by women in the 1920s in New York, Chicago, and Washington, D.C., and other cities. In Washington, they even introduced an anti-flirt week and succeeded in getting some men arrested. And that means, Lou, you've scored 1 point.
Yes.
It's now the turn of Tony Hawks. Tony recently revealed that he's currently reading his son chapters from his book Round Island with a Fridge each night before he goes to sleep, which I should imagine is pretty much immediately. Your subject, Tony, is guitars, musical instruments with long necks and six strings that are played with the fingers or with a pick. Off you go, Tony.
Guitars can be made from mud, sulfur, hospitals, guns and fish.
Marcus.
I should imagine an American has made a guitar out of guns.
Well done.
Yes.
It's in fact a Colombian musician, Cesar Lopez, who makes guitars from guns, old AK-47s and other assault rifles. Lopez receives the guns from disillusioned Colombian guerrilla fighters or soldiers and uses his creations to advocate for anti-violence.
Oh, I was going to say fish, so I'm glad I didn't get in.
There have been more serious injuries from people playing the guitar than there have been from people playing rugby. Inflammation from rubbing the guitar against your chest is called guitar nipple.
Lou.
Do you think there's more accidents with guitars than rugby?
No, there isn't.
Cool.
No, not more serious injuries, which is what Tony said.
The
real killer?
What's that?
Stairs. Oh. Absolutely lethal.
Really? And also...
And we toy with them every day, up and down, yeah, and up and down.
And also men.
Yes, yeah. Obviously.
And we toy with them every day
people,
as well.
And sharks, of course.
They're only dangerous if you look like a seal.
I tell you what, though, a male shark on a staircase... My God, it does not get worse than that. If he's holding a guitar made of guns...
Once children reach the age of six, they all want to be guitar heroes. So absolutely everyone forms a band and comes up with a name that they later regret. Former President Bill Clinton played guitars in a band called the Potato Farmers and released a single called My Arse Is Sore in Arkansas.
Lou.
I think some of that's true. Clinton was in a band called The Potato Home.
No, that's not true.
He was a saxophonist anyway.
And he was a saxophonist.
And a sex offender.
Racing driver Damon Hill played guitar in a band called Sex Hitler and the Hormones. Former British athlete Roger Black played bass guitar for the Psychopathic Vegetables.
What's the one before Roger Black?
Before Roger Black, the Damon Hill one?
Yeah, Damon Hill.
Sex, Hitler and the Hormones.
Yeah, sounds like a great band.
You think that's true?
Yes.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah! That is an excellent name for a band. Yeah.
I bet he drove the van for them.
George Harrison famously used a guitar to beat off...
Marcus.
Oh, sorry, there was more. I thought you were stopping. I thought you were stopping at George Harrison famously used a guitar. I do think that's true.
To be fair, I didn't put a comma in there. There is more.
Okay.
George Harrison famously used a guitar to beat off burglars at his mansion at St George's Hill Estate, Surrey.
Did he? Yeah, I think he did.
No, he didn't.
Oh.
No.
How did he beat off burglars?
I don't think he got that familiar with them.
And I am now playing his famous guitar riff from the beginning of Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds.
Lou.
I think... You did play the opening thing of Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, didn't you?
I did.
Was that a truth?
No. Because it wasn't a famous guitar riff, it was played on the organ.
Oh, you bitch.
This famous guitar riff. Led to guitarist Peter Maloney suing Deep Purple when he claimed he'd written the riff first. Brian May gave evidence at the trial, claiming that he'd heard Pete Maloney play it when they'd been at school together. May's evidence was dismissed on the grounds that he was of unsound mind, having recently started keeping spiders as pets and having released a cologne that smells of badgers.
Marcus.
Did a man sue Deep Purple because he'd written the opening riff to Smoke on the Water?
No.
Right.
No. What did happen, however, is the famous Smoke on the Water riff bears an uncanny resemblance to the opening of a song called Maria Moita by Brazilian Carlos Lyra, which was released 8 years before Smoke on the Water. And we have a little recording of that, which we could play in.
I wish that had sounded a bit more Brazilian.
Now, all they did, they heard that and they de-Brazilianed it, didn't they? Don't know what that means, letting the hair grow back. Anyway, Lyra never sued. Peter Maloney, the person who Tony claimed sued Deep Purple, doesn't exist. And that's the end of Tony's lecture. And at the end of that round, you've managed to smuggle three truths past the rest of the panel. The first one of which is that inflammation from rubbing the guitar against your chest is called guitar nipple, which was first mentioned in the British Medical Journal in 1974 and caused by the rubbing of the body of the guitar against the player's chest, has become a common term among musicians. A bogus condition described as cello scrotum. It was also mentioned in the British Medical Journal, though the authors of the letter describing the condition subsequently revealed it to be a joke. The second truth is that former British athlete Roger Black played bass guitar in a punk band called the Psychopathic Vegetables. Oh. And Roger Black actually very kindly answered our questions about his punk band himself.
That's a good thing about punks these days. They're very...
They've all turned out
to be terribly helpful.
Oh, he's a very nice punk, isn't he? And the third truth that Tony managed to smuggle is that Brian May released a cologne that smells of badgers. The fragrance sold for £177 per bottle and was said to smell of sandalwood and badger.
I bet Anita Dobson absolutely loses her mind when he's... splashes a bit of that on behind his ears.
She is crawling up the walls.
Right. Brian, you smell like the side of a field.
Anyway, that means, Tony, that you've scored 3 points. Which brings us to the final scores. In fourth place, with minus 4 points, we have Lou Sanders. In third place with minus 2 points, it's Tony Hawks. In second place with no points, it's Marcus Brigstock. And in first place with an unassailable 8 points, it's this week's winner, Holly Walsh. That's about it for this week. Goodbye.
The Unbelievable Truth was devised by John Naismith and Graham Garden and featured David Mitchell in the chair with panellists Tony Hawks, Holly Walsh, Lou Sanders and Marcus Brigstock. The chairman's script was written by Dan Gaster and Colin Swash and the producer was John Naismith. It was a random production of BBC Radio 4.
And we've more Unbelievable Truths at the same time next week. And tomorrow evening at 6:30, it's the final instalment of the series of Meet David Sedaris, where the master storyteller turns his attention to mispronunciations and misunderstandings.
In Oslo, I met a woman who heard a tourist tell a shopkeeper that she was there to see the Fjords. That was a decade ago, and I haven't said fjord the right way since, the woman told me. And I'm Norwegian. I later met a couple who say tortoise for the same reason. Even if we know it's a turtle and not a tortoise, we say tortoise instead because it's just more fun, they explain.
Meet David Sedaris is tomorrow night's 6:30 comedy here on Radio 4.